You're listening to Live from Lord North Street, a podcast from the Institute of Economic Affairs. We may be leaving the EU, but what should our mode of departure look like? Today we're joined by the IEA's Head of Health and Welfare, Dr. Christian Niemitz, and Associate Director Kate Andrews, to discuss the pros and cons of the so-called Norway option, a form of Brexit under which the UK would leave the European Union customs union, but remain in the single market. The idea has been gaining traction recently, with the government's Chequers model looking unpalatable to EU negotiators and the British public alike. Yet although Christian is a proponent of the Norway option, it's not actually as simple as that. Christian would probably back a hard Brexit, provided we had a realistic chance of becoming a deregulating, free-trading nation outside of the single market. Unfortunately, here the zeitgeist is very much against free market types, he argues. If you like what you hear, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes channel, IEA Conversations.
Christian, thanks for joining me today. A lot of people have tried to liken the Norway option to staying in the EU by stealth. Can you explain simply for our listeners what the Norway-style option actually is?
Yes, sure. So there's always been this tension. Traditionally, the main Eurosceptic argument in Britain was that in 1973, Britain joined what people then thought was a common market, an economic union, and that the European Union then later evolved into something much more like a political federation. So the argument was, this isn't what we signed up for. That always made a lot of sense to me. But if that is your main objection to the EU, then you should be a soft Brexiteer. You should be in favor of the Norway option, because the Norway option means you would still be part of that single market in most areas, other than agriculture and fishing, but you would be, for all intents and purposes, in the single market. But you would be outside of the political structures of the EU. You would no longer be bound by anything that the EU does in areas like justice and home affairs, and in the future, the possibility of a European army. All of that would no longer apply to Britain, as it does not apply to Norway today. You would be outside of the political structures of the EU, but you would still be part of the same common market.
And of course, if the UK were to adopt the Norway option, it would also be leaving the customs union, which would mean that it could strike its own free trade deals around the world.
Yes.
So that benefit of Brexit would remain.
Yes, that's always been one of the main Eurosceptic arguments, that being in a customs union doesn't work for Britain. And that is true. Customs union membership makes sense for small countries that are surrounded by big neighbors and that trade mostly with them. It makes sense that, say, Andorra would be, even though it's not an EU member, would be in the customs union, because it is such a small country that it wouldn't make sense for them to build up a customs bureaucracy of their own. It makes sense to outsource that. Or in the same way, Liechtenstein is in a customs union with Switzerland. Again, clear to see, it's obvious why they do that. It's a very tiny country. It wouldn't make sense for them. They're too small to have a customs bureaucracy of their own. Most of their trade is with their bigger neighbors anyway. Britain isn't like that. Britain has had historically trade links with places all over the world, coming from the days of the empire. It makes sense for Britain to have its own trade policy and to adopt freer trade with the rest of the world than many EU countries would want to have. So for Britain, it makes perfect sense to be outside of the customs union. The customs union is not particularly valuable economically, and for Britain, it is probably a net liability. Britain would be better off outside of the customs union.
So the UK could leave the customs union, strike its own free trade deals, but remain in the single market. Can you explain, in simple and practical terms, the benefits of remaining in the single market?
Yes.
Why is that a good thing?
First of all, the main benefit of the Norway option for me was always that it is an off-the-shelf solution. It's a solution that is already around. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. You don't have to start from zero. You can just emulate a model that already exists. The Norway arrangement has been around for something like 25 years. It's stood the test of time, tried and tested, and it would be fairly easy to just say, we will more or less do what they do. This seems to work all right. We want the same thing. And
so one of your arguments, one of the benefits of the Norway option is that it's simple. Brexit
yes.
is just done and dusted, essentially.
Absolutely.
You actually, I remember this was a while back, you wrote an alternative history blog, which you really enjoy doing on socialism and many other topics.
Sure.
And you wrote one for Brexit, didn't you? And it was the idea, what if the day after the referendum in 2016, David Cameron hadn't resigned and had simply announced that we were adopting the Norway style? And what would have happened from there? Can you explain that a little bit?
Yes, I'm sure there is a parallel universe somewhere where that is what happened, where they, after the EU referendum, the government simply announced, right, we're leaving the EU, but we don't want to overcomplicate this process. We want an easy, relaxed Brexit. We're not in a position to come up with something super original, so we will just copy the Norway arrangement. And the result of that is essentially that the whole process would be solved within a couple of weeks. It's maybe a bit oversimplified in that article, but broadly, I think that would be the case. You would go for an easy Brexit. It would be certainly doable in less than 2 years. Could be that by now, the whole thing would be over. We would have all the post-Brexit arrangements in place, and we could think about what do we do then. We could prepare for what happens next. What do we do with the freedoms that we gain from leaving the EU? We could now think about what will replace the common agricultural policy, what exactly will replace the common fisheries policy, what are our trade arrangements going to look like after Brexit, and that could all apply from the second we leave the EU.
But the easy solution is not always the right solution. Surely there are some downsides to the Norway option. Would you acknowledge any particular downsides?
Yes, it is true that as long as you're in the single market, you're still bound by single market regulations. Now, I don't see much of a political appetite for changing those rules anyway. That is why at the moment I'd be reluctant to leave. But in the long term, we don't know how the single market and single market rules are going to evolve. It could well be that, for example, they adopt a much more punitive approach to financial markets regulation, something that would hurt the financial sector and therefore would have a disproportionate impact on Britain, where that is one of the main industries. So it doesn't have to be a permanent option. I don't think anyone advocates this as something that should last forever, but certainly as a medium-term solution. And if, say, in 5 or 10 years we have extricated ourselves from the EU, we have a different trade policy in place, we have a different agricultural and fisheries policy, and so on. We're outside of all the political structures of the EU, and we find that relationship with the EU, the European institutions, is still too close. We would want to have something even further away, then that can still always be done. It's just that will then be from starting from a very different position. That would mean if, let's say, in 2025, British government decides we actually want to leave the European Economic Area, the single market, as well. We're still too close to the European institutions. They could then concentrate only on that. All the rest would already be done and dusted. It would be just that. And if those negotiations then break down, you would have continued single market membership as a fallback option. So there would be no need to panic and no need to rush. There would be no possibility of a no-deal exit. It would then be a sensible fallback option that works okay, but where you could try to find something that's even better and concentrate exclusively on that.
So are you saying that you do see this as quite a temporary solution? Because one of the arguments against the Norway option is that the UK would still be subject to EU rules and regulations, but in this scenario would no longer have a seat at the table. So it's almost the worst of both worlds. Not only do you have to listen to the EU and have rules dictated to you, but you actually don't have a say in what those rules are anymore.
Yes. First of all, it's not all EU rules. The amount of EU rules that apply to Norway, Iceland, and Liechtenstein is a bit disputed. Some say it's quite a lot. Some say actually no, that's they do have opt-outs that just don't always use them. That's one thing. They do have a say over those rules in the sense that they are at the table when they're drafted. It's just that they don't have a formal vote on it. And it's debatable how important that vote actually is. I'm not aware of an example where the British vote that changed EU legislation, that all the other countries wanted a particular regulation and the British delegation said no, and that they were able to stop it or change it. It could be that that has happened, but it would have to be a fairly close call. Mm-hmm. Normally, you would just be one among 28, and it's not realistic that you would have that much of a possibility to change it anyway. So whether that matters that much in practice is debatable.
So do you favor the EEA Norway option because you genuinely believe that it is the right one? Or are you actually expressing a frustration with the way that the Leave campaign and the overall arguments for Brexit went? By that I mean, there clearly is a classically liberal argument for Leave. We hear many of our colleagues at the IEA make it on a pretty frequent basis. But overall, in terms of the mood of the nation, a lot of the desire to leave is not that liberal. It has a very protectionist feel to it, tends to be very anti-immigration, things that, you know, that you and I wouldn't want to put our names to. So is your support for EEA genuinely because you believe it's the right option for the UK? Or is it because you fear that when we leave, it won't be on liberal terms?
It's a mix of both. Even if we had a much more liberal political climate, I think it still would make sense to have a transition arrangement to stay in the single market for the time being. But if that were the case in a more liberal climate, I would probably be keener on saying that this really has to be quite time limited. And after a couple of years, there has to be a sunset clause. It has to be revisited, and that we should leave at some point in the not too distant future. I would be more worried in such a scenario about the possibility of the Norway option becoming indeed a permanent solution.
Because is your end goal a free trade agreement with the EU? Would that be the ideal?
Yes, ideally something like the arrangement that Switzerland has. They are outside right. of the single market, but they are reasonably close to it. They have bilateral deals and replicate elements of the single market through bilateral agreements. Bit more complicated than the Norway arrangement, but it has some benefits in the sense that they don't have to apply EU rules to the domestic economy, and they are outside of that. But yeah, I think it is absolutely the case that a lot of liberal Brexiteers have deluded themselves into thinking that 52% of the electorate are on their side. They're not. That really isn't true. This was not a vote for free trade and deregulation and liberal market economics. We can look at the surveys, at the more detailed breakdowns where people were asked about their motivations. Why did you vote this way? And it really was the most important, or the second most important reason for Leave voters was to limit immigration. This had nothing to do with more liberal notions of self-governance. That is a romanticization of the Leave vote, because historically, the Eurosceptic movement has been a liberal movement. They had that tendency to project their own motives for criticizing the EU into the wider electorate. But all the surveys show that that is not true. There has always been a liberal tradition of Euroscepticism. That's been my brand of Euroscepticism, if you will. That's the reason why I've been initially attracted to this, that you get people like Daniel Hannan and Douglas Carswell, who make more generally a case for decentralization. And they would make that not just with regard to the EU, but also internally. They would also argue, as do I, that Britain itself is too centralized, that we have far too much power concentrated in Westminster, and that ideally you would devolve a lot of that to towns, cities, and regions. And if that is your general outlook on politics, that you want power to be dispersed and decentralized, then Euroscepticism can be a logical extension of that. That is a perfectly consistent liberal case for leaving the EU and for decentralization more broadly. But that is not the case that won the referendum. Now, I do realize that in a referendum campaign, you have to be a bit more populist. You can't just come with academic arguments. But if your main focus is on limiting immigration, which it was at least in the final weeks of the campaign, then that does set the tone for what happens afterwards. And that's what we've seen afterwards. The Norway option is something that years ago Eurosceptics would present as quite good. I've been making the case for something like the Norway option for much longer than the possibility of a referendum exists, long before 2016. And before then, nobody ever said to me, "Oh, you're not a real Eurosceptic. That is Remain in anything but name." That used to be a perfectly normal Eurosceptic argument, that we should leave and be a bit more like Norway or somewhere between Norway and Switzerland, something like that. It was not always well specified what exactly the alternative should be, but mentioning Norway as an example was always an acceptable position. It's just that after the referendum, the goalposts have shifted very quickly, and this traditional Eurosceptic argument that we should be in a common market but not part of the same political federation was suddenly erased. The argument became that anything that means that you have a closer relationship with the EU than with some completely unrelated third country, than with, say, Japan, is a betrayal of the will of the people.
Why do you think it shifted so much? So, for example, immigration was a big selling point during the referendum, that it could be further capped, migration from the EU, if the UK decided to leave. But NHS spending was too. I mean, the infamous bus with £350 million a week more for the National Health Service. Now, the UK hasn't left the European Union yet. There is no Brexit dividend, and the Prime Minister has already pledged £20 billion extra a year to the National Health Service. So it's not obvious to me that if you, say, had a Norway-style relationship with the EU, that a lot of those pledges couldn't be upheld. Like them or loathe them, they could be upheld. The big one that stands out actually is immigration. Do you think that the goalpost has shifted because of that one issue, or is there something else going on?
It certainly moved center stage, and that wasn't always the case. A decade ago or so, even UKIP wasn't banging on about immigration as much as they did in more recent years. It was never such a big issue. And that is because, quite obviously, people who criticize immigration, what they have in mind is self-segregated communities that don't integrate and form parallel societies, that kind of immigration. But that really isn't the case with European immigration. So that's why that hasn't been such a big issue before, and reason why I think we should just keep free movement as well. Mm. It's a good thing.
So one of the benefits of Brexit, and this goes back to the NHS point, that we don't speak about as much. Once the UK leaves the European Union, it's going to be much harder to blame domestic policy woes on the European Union. And so many issues plaguing the UK right now, the cost of living crisis, housing, the National Health Service, issues of centralization, these are things that the UK could solve tomorrow. It doesn't need to ask the permission of the European Union. Isn't there an argument that if you do have a clean Brexit and you really just fully separate, that might be turbulent. It might have an impact on the freedom of goods to move across borders. In many areas, it could go badly wrong. But at least the UK will now have to take complete responsibility for the domestic policy decisions that it makes. And the European Union can no longer be used as a scapegoat for many of the issues that we face. If we were to go down an EEA arrangement, surely the scapegoating would continue.
Yes. That is a possibility. The trouble is, it's very, like a lot of benefits of a hard Brexit, those benefits are all highly speculative. They may or they may not arise, whereas the costs of leaving the single market are dead certain. There will be definitely a cost of leaving the single market because of the disruption of integrated supply chains and so on. If you look at all the modelling that has been done before the referendum and also afterwards, first of all, pretty much all the models that have been done showed that in the long term, medium to long term, Brexit would make Britain worse off. But if you look at the more detailed breakdowns, it was never so much leaving the EU that was projected to make Britain worse off. It was leaving the single market. Mm. The cost of leaving the EU as such is pretty much zero. The EU as such has almost no economic benefits. There are some economic benefits to the customs union because you would have to have customs checks if you left it. But even those losses are projected to be quite trivial, and there you can plausibly say that would be outweighed if we really then adopted a proactive free trade policy, and if this led to much freer trade with emerging economies or other developed economies around the world. There, from a cost-benefit perspective, I would say, yeah, that is worth taking the risk. Mm. With the single market, it's a different story. Almost all the projected costs of leaving the EU are really projected costs of leaving the single market. That is the part that really matters when it comes to economics. That's something that I would only be comfortable advocating if we really had a good chance of realizing those potential benefits, which I just don't see. Yeah, there could all be all sorts of potential avenues, like the one that you mentioned, that it changes political accountability and that in that way it leads to the realization of a number of benefits. But that's all highly speculative. I wouldn't want to advocate something that means a 3% or 4% or 5% permanent loss in GDP after a couple of years.
No, I can't blame you for not wanting to advocate that.
Yeah. I would if we had some realistic option of also then realizing or implementing policies that lead to a gain of the same magnitude or an even bigger magnitude. There you could say, okay, then that's maybe worth taking that gamble.
So you are genuinely concerned that Brexit comes with some serious economic risks?
Yes.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean, I don't believe the horror scenarios that we won't have, that we will
medicine,
run out of food, and
that
there will be no sandwiches.
You're not a fearmonger.
No.
But you think realistically that this is going to be a slump for the UK, at least for a while.
I don't even know whether it's going to be a slump, but the projections just say that there will not be any one moment where something catastrophic will happen. It's more that after 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, overall economic output will be lower than it would otherwise have been. Mm-hmm. And there you have to ask, okay, for what?
So you definitely maintain your support for EAA membership then. Given the way that the cards have been drawn, you think this is the best outcome for the UK post-Brexit?
Yes.
Simple, succinct. Thank you so much for joining me, Christian.
Thank you.
For more podcasts, blogs, films and reports, go to our website at iea.org.uk.